We are holding on Kufir Aleph, Omer Aleph, the 12th line. We learned yesterday about the whole matter of liver. So the liver, we said, is very soaked with blood, and therefore you need therefore you need to do something with it before you just cook it normally. And we talked about the whole point of as far as so would it be osur if you cook it by itself? Does it osur other things if you cook it with them? What about can you dip it in vinegar or boiling water to blanch it? So now the Gemara says, Rav Bar Shaba ikla lebei Rav Nachman. One time Rav Bar Shaba visited the house of Rav Nachman, isolate kavda shlika, and they brought him a liver that had been stewed, that had been cooked a long time, v'loy ochal, but he wouldn't eat from it. Now Tosfos points out that it must be now if it had been dipped in boiling water, then Rav Bar Shaba would have eaten from it, but it wasn't. However, so now in Rav Nachman's household, they didn't bother with that because they weren't cooking any other meat with it. And again, according to Tosfos' Shitta, the fact that you're not cooking anything else with it doesn't create a problem. It's going to ask for the soup and it's going to ask for the kalim. They weren't worried about that. Because that process hadn't been done, then Rav Bar Shaba wouldn't eat it. Omrulay, so they told Rav Nachman, Barbe Rav de la Gavlay Ochel. There's a Talmud from the yeshiva inside in the house who doesn't want to eat. Umanu Rav Bar Shaba, namely Rav Bar Shaba, so he's not eating from what we're offering him. Omrulahu Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to him, Gomu la Shaba. Literally, gomu means like force it down his throat. Rashi translates it hal itu, hagmiehu vahalitehu. Rashi says like you have the word like you have the word when Eliezer asks Rivka to drink from her jug. He says hagmiini no, which means let me drink. So the shortish gom means like to drink down, like stuff down. Like in other words, Rav Nachman is saying make him eat it whether he likes it or not. And he called him Shaba after his father. He himself is Rav Bar Shaba, but he's calling him Shaba after his father. Meaning, in other words, Rav Nachman is saying, look, it doesn't matter that it wasn't blanched. It's still the Mishnah says that the liver itself is not also if it's cooked by itself. We had a Mishnah in Trumas that we learned about that yesterday. So therefore, he's telling the members of his household, don't let this Talmud Rav Bar Shaba be machmir and go against the Mishnah. He's got to eat it. Now, why did Rav Bar Shaba do what he did? So we'll talk about now. So the Gemara says, Ketanoi. There's actually a machlokas tanoim about that. Rabbi Eliezer, Oim, HaKovet Eseres Ve'enin Eseres. Rabbi Eliezer says that the liver aser is other meat that it's cooked with, but it itself doesn't become aser. Mepneshi Peletas Ve'enin Belas, because it exudes, but it doesn't absorb. So that fits with the Mishnah and Trumas that we learned. And Rabbi Shmuel, Benosh Rabbi Yechon ben Breka, but Rabbi Shmuel, Benosh Rabbi Yechon ben Breka says, it depends. Misubelas, if it's spiced, or seres v'ne seres, then not only is it osur, but it asurs the other, not only does it asur other meat that it's cooked with, but it itself is osur by being cooked by itself. Because when it's spiced, then that causes it to get softened, and then therefore we can't say, as we learned before, Idi Detoted Lemiflat Lebala, that while it's exuding, it's not going to absorb, because as a matter of fact, because it's spiced, then therefore that is actually going to cause it to absorb as well. And so then Oiseres, so it itself will aser, other meat that it's cooked with, Vineseres, and it itself will be also as well, Shluka, and also if it's heavily cooked, if it's stewed, then also a seres for naseres, then you have the same problem. It's going to aser other meat, and it itself is going to be aser. In other words, the idea is, again, because when it's normal cooking, then fine, you know, I did tota lemifla, lebala, it's busy exuding, it's not going to absorb. But when it's stewed, when it's cooked for a long time, then eventually it stops exuding, and now it's going to start absorbing from the blood, and therefore you have a problem. So that explains Rav Bar Shaba's opinion. He holds like Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yechon ben Breka. Meanwhile, the Mishnah that we quoted before goes like Rabbi Eliezer. Well, Rabbi Nachman is saying, look, you have a Mishnah to that effect. You can't go against it, but Rav Bar Shaba held that you could. In fact, there are Rishonim who explain that the argument might only be, the argument of the Tanoim might only be where it's stewed, where it's spiced, and in fact they might all agree that it's Osir. So it comes out, so many Rishonim learn in that case, and it comes out from this, that liver ought to be mutter if it's cooked by itself, or even if it's stewed by itself, and there shouldn't be a problem, because after all, we have that Mishnah, and we see Rav Nachman is doing Lamaisa that way. On the other hand, the Rambam Paschal is not like that. The Rambam says, if you cooked it, and didn't previously roast it, or soak it in vinegar or in boiling water, then everything is going to be also the pot as well as the liver itself. So that's the Rambam's shita, and that ends up being brought lahalacha. The various nosek kalim on the Rambam and on Shulchan Aruch have different explanations of why that should be so. When on the face of it, the Gemara is saying over here that it ought to be fine. Actually, what the Mechaber says, the Dievet, if it was cooked by itself without roasting, then the Mechaber brings that the liver itself will be mutter, but the pot will be osir. The yesh misha osir, there are those who say it's osir, and in fact, the Ramah says that is a minhag to say that everything is osir. So we don't go according to Rav Nachman, and we don't go according to that Sam Mishnah. So one point is, because the Gemara is saying that, again, since you have the opinion over here that if it was cooked heavily, that if it was stewed, then it's going to be osir, how much is going to, at what point does it go from regular cooking to stewing, then you don't really know. And in addition, you also have further in the Gemara about this, more opinions on this subject that are going to be relevant as well. Fine. The Gemara continues, Rav Barav Huna ikla lebe Rabba Barav Nachman. One time, Rabba Barav Huna visited the household of Rabba Barav Nachman. I see lekame tlas sovi tachei. They brought in front of him three saw is an enormous amount. A saw is a measure of volume, not weight. So, in terms of volume, it would be the volume of about 20 pounds of water, about 2.5 gallons of water. So three saw is quite a large amount, tachi of bread that had been smeared with fat. So they did that in order to make like a very high quality loaf. They smeared it, Rashi says, actually with oil and honey. So Rabbi Barahona asked them, Mihaba Yaditu Dasina, did you know that I was coming, that you prepared such a amount for me? Amrulay, they told him, no, mi adifas lon mina, are you any more important than it, meaning the Shabbos? We prepared them, l'kavod Shabbos. Dichtiv, karos al Shabbos oinig, as the Pasuk says, you should call Shabbos a delight, and we prepared all this food for Shabbos. You happen to come, by all means, we'll serve it to you, especially if there's an expression that a Talmud Chacham is called Shabbos, but nevertheless, though, we didn't actually prepare, but don't know, we didn't prepare it for you, because we didn't intend to come. So now the Gemara continues with the second half of the story. That part is also in Masechta Shabbos, because the Gemara gives it over there as an example of how you have to prepare so well for Shabbos and have things as nice as possible. Now the Gemara continues, Adahochi, as they were talking, Ashkacha, who kavda, Rabba Barav Huna noticed that there was a liver over there, which Rishonim explained that it had been roasted, to have a simpona de Vlia Dama. And it had in it there was a blood vessel in it that was full of blood. So what had they done? They had roasted the liver, but they hadn't opened up that blood vessel ahead of time in order to get it out. So Rabbi Barahona tells them, "Amai avditu hachi, why'd you do that? That blood, mela the liver itself, you could say it's soaked through with blood. But fine, that blood at least hasn't moved from its place, and therefore we can consider that to be mutter to eat. But this blood that's in the blood vessel over here is all gathered in one place, and like we learned earlier in the Masechta, such things you have to be opened up before you kasher it or before you do anything with it. So why didn't you do that? He asks them. Omrulay Ella Hasi Navid. So they asked him, okay, so what should we do? And we already roasted it. If that's not good enough, then what do we need to do? Omrulahu, so he tells them, Kiru Shesi Ve'erev, what you have to do is you have to tear the liver lengthwise and widthwise, V'chitucha L'tachas, and then make sure that the cut side is downward, so that way the blood will flow out, while it's being roasted. So this way, in other words, this way you'll be covered all bases. Now Tosfos says that we're talking about over here that this would be if you're going to afterwards cook it, or you're gonna eat, again, we learned yesterday, Tosfos holds that if it's roasted or if it's salted, then afterwards you can cook it. So now Tosfos explains it means if after roasting it you plan to cook it, or after salting it you plan to cook it, then that's when you need the cut side on the bottom. Otherwise, Tosfos says if you're just going to be roasting it, what would you need that for? You're going to say because of the blood vessels, fine. But then you need to cut those regardless. But you don't really need to rip the whole thing. But then, as the Gemara is going to go on to point out, you have a difference between that and the spleen. The fact is the spleen has blood vessels too, and as far as blood vessels, you have to cut them no matter what. So clearly it must be that when we're talking about that if you're going to have to cut it, shesi ve'erev, rip it, shesi ve'erev, and then roast it. So we would have to mean, Tosfos says, it means where afterwards you plan to cook it. So in other words, the point is that here, when it comes to the liver, it's not enough just to roast it, and also that you need to make sure that the blood vessels in it are cut. However, the Gemara says v'hani mili b'kavda. That would really only apply to the liver, again, because the liver has so much of a collection of blood in it that you need to actually tear it first. Aval tachla, but if you want to cook spleen, now the spleen is also a very red organ, and it seems like it's also a lot of blood, and in fact the spleen does it there. Red blood cells are broken down in it. So you would think the same thing, maybe it should have the same din as the liver. No, don't worry about that. Shumna ba'almahu, it's just considered fat. It doesn't have any more blood than the other ones. So you need to, if there's the blood vessels in it, you need to cut. But afterwards you can salt it like any other meat and do what you do with regular meat, and you even allowed then to be able to cook it together with other meat, there'd be no problem with that. Tosfos does point out that, yeah, any blood that comes out of it is going to be also daraisa. This is an example of blood that a person would be chayav karis for eating, but once you take care of that by salting or by roasting, as the case may be, then you can eat it no problem. We did learn earlier in the Masechta there was a layer of fat on it, which does have to be removed. That's a different matter. That's chelev. As in fact the Gemara says, Kihod de Shmuel, as we have the example of Shmuel, Abdulei Tafshilot Tachli, they would make him a dish of cooked spleen, the Yom de Avid Milsa, on a day when he had the matter done. The matter means bloodletting. In those times, bloodletting was a very common procedure that people would do all the time for their health. And the point is, afterwards, a person has lost blood, so now they need to replenish it. So Shmuel knew, and he told his family, that spleen is very good for replenishing the lost blood, and therefore they would prepare him for that. They would prepare that for him on a day when he had bloodletting done. And the point is, in other words, again, you know, they would cook it together with spices and with other ingredients. So we see that it is mutter, and there's no problem with it, even cooking it, even together with other ingredients, other meat, spices or whatever, because it's not blood. It just has a red look to it. And it has a red look to it. In fact, actually, before when we had Yalta's statement a couple of days ago about how everything in the world that's also Hashem gave us something parallel to it, that's mutter. Tosfos had brought there from the famous Titan, Rabbi Elazar HaKaller, who was here. Yalta had given the example that we can't eat blood, but we can eat liver. Rabbi Elazar HaKaller, in one of his piyutim that Tosfos quoted over there, mentions also we can't eat blood, but we can eat spleen. So even though, again, you know, the spleen, so we're saying it does contain a fair amount of blood, but not nearly as much as the liver, and therefore you can prepare it like ordinary meat, and we see that they would do that for Shmuel. Okay. Now, let's talk about, so we said that one way of kashering the liver is to roast it, and nowadays that the accepted halacha by the poskim is that that's the only way to do it. In principle, you have this idea of blanching it in vinegar or in boiling water, but then Shulchan Aruch mentions that the Ge'onim already said it's also to do that, because what if you don't do it properly? So basically, you do need to roast it first. So now let's talk about what if you're roasting something together with other meat. So the Gemara says Itmar, so we have a discussion on the point. Chavde ilovid bistra. If you're roasting on the same spit, and you have liver, and you have liver on top, and then below it further down, you have regular meat. So then it would be mutter. Meaning, in other words, like this. When you have regular meat, you think about it, any meat that you're going to be roasting, then blood is going to be dripping and exuding out of it. Don't you have a problem then that one piece is going to absorb the other ones? So we say that, no, that's not a problem. Because, again, while it's busy exuding, it's not going to absorb, and therefore one piece is not going to absorb from the other. So now we're saying, even if the upper one is liver, which again has a lot of extra blood in it, Rashi points out the way that they would roast in those days was that you'd have the meat on a spit, and you'd have the point of the spit pointing downward, and so then you have so you'd put on one piece, another piece, and therefore, so in other words, so if you put on the liver first, then it comes out that's higher up than the other ones. So now we're saying that that's not a problem because the blood is just going to slide off. It exudes out of the liver onto the other meat, but that doesn't matter because the blood is not going to get absorbed so easily. It's going to slide right off the other meat. On the other hand, if you were to roast an udder, which as we talked about before, the udder contains milk, and you have this whole issue where you need to cut it open and press it against the wall to get as much of the milk as possible out. But now, if you were to take an udder and roast it above the other meat, then you have a problem because then it's going to be also my time a chol of seruchim yisrich, because milk doesn't just slide off so easily. It actually sticks to it ends up sticking to the meat, and then therefore you have bus of a chol of, not a daraisa level, granted, because we said that the milk of a shechted animal is also only dirabanan, but nevertheless, it's going to be also dirabanan, and therefore you're going to have a problem. Rashi implies, and the Rashba says that it would actually be mutter even b'chatzchila to roast liver above other meat on the same spit. Tosfos learns that no, the Tosfos says it would be l'chatzchila osur. And only b'diyeved would it be mutter. There's different girsos. My Rav Ranchberg on the side over here brings a slightly different girsa in Tosfos, but in any case, they say l'chatzchila it would be osur. Because after all, the liver again contains so much blood, it doesn't get out through normal salting like other meat. So therefore, l'chatzchila you shouldn't do it. But b'diyeved we're saying it would be fine according to this version, which now we're going to have other versions in the Gemara over here. Tosfos discusses how this fits with Rabbeinu Tam's opinion that we learned before, that Rabbeinu Tam holds that the whole question as far as the liver is really not if it was not salted in the first place. If it was salted, Rabbeinu Tam would hold there's no problem in the first place. But Tosfos says that we'd have to figure out how the Argamata works according to him. Tosfos also points out, you can't just say, again, kabola kach polta, just as it absorbs it, the piece below it, it's going to exude it, because the problem is, again, the liver contains so much blood that eventually you're going to come to the point where it's going to absorb and it's not going to exude. But nevertheless, we're saying that's not an issue, and you're allowed to do that. But not with the udder, because then again, you have the problem of bus of a cholera over here. You have milk that drips out of it and lands on the other meat and gets absorbed. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Reb Binyamin Ardal learns the halacha the other way around. Tachlei lovei bistra shari, to roast an udder above other meat would be mutter. My time a chalev shchuta derabanan, because the whole issue of the milk from the udder is only also derabanan. So the chachamim are not going to be machmir to this extent to say that it should be also if you did that. Kavei lovei bistra also, but to roast liver above other meat on the same spit would be also because gam daraisa, because after all blood is also daraisa. So it's not gonna slip off. You can't say it's gonna slide off and it's not gonna get absorbed. Some of it may get absorbed in the other piece, and then you're gonna have a problem. So the Gemara, what's the halacha? Dorash Meremer, Samaremer gave it the Rosha. Pilchasa, the bottom line halacha, ben kavda, ben kachla, whether liver or whether udder, tuse bisra shori, if you do it below other meat, then it will be mutter, because then whatever gets exuded out of the liver or out of the udder is just going to fall into the fire. You love it, bistra, but if you did it above other meat, if you did it, then we'll allow it according to the two versions over there, but you shouldn't do it, but b'dievet, if you did it, then we're not going to ask through the other meat. So now the big question is, what kind of udder are we talking about? Are we talking about where they tack and removed all the milk as much as possible? Then why can't they roast it above other meat? And if you didn't, then why indeed shouldn't it be also even b'dievet because of the milk drippings on it? So you have a machlokas we've shown him about that. Tosfos says we're talking about you did take the milk out, you did rip it and then shesi ve'edav, you did press it against the wall. Nevertheless, though, still the Chachamim are saying don't roast it above other meat l'chatchila, because there's still some milk that remains in it. If you cook it together, Tosfos says mele, you're not going to notice the little amount of milk that drips out. But when you roast it, it's different. Then you have a problem. The Rashba, on the other hand, says we're talking about it where you didn't remove the milk from the cow, from the udder. So they're saying when you cook it together, then you have a problem. The fact is, all the milk that got exuded is still there in the pot, and it all gets absorbed into the meat. As opposed to over here, you're roasting them, fine, it falls onto the other meat, but most of it then drips off that and lands in the fire. You have a tiny little bit of it that gets absorbed into the meat. Now again, Rashi stresses that that would be for the kind of ovens they had in the times of the Gemara. For us, Rashi says, for all kinds of spits where we do them horizontally, then Rashi says it would be also lachatchila completely, because the difference is since we do them horizontally, then sometimes you may have what happens. You pick up the spit to take it off the fire, then you're going to have that what you thought was on bottom is actually going to be on top, and vice versa. So now to roast liver on a spit with any other meat, or to roast udder on a spit with any other meat is going to be a problem regardless, and therefore you can't do that. So again, l'chatchila, you can't do it. The d'yeved, you could do it. But Amar does add a detail that if the liver had already been salted, and fine, we're saying salting is not enough to remove the blood of it, nevertheless, then you still could roast it together with other meat, because then already it's considered like normal meat in that regard. So the Gemara tells in this connection. By the way, Tosfos points out over here, I mean, we are talking about the blood over here that we're talking about was cooked, and it wouldn't be also daraisa, but nevertheless, until it actually got cooked, it would be also daraisa, as opposed to the milk of a shchuta to begin with is only also derabanan. Fine. Tosfos also points out in this connection, by the way, when people eat udder, when they roast it or prepare it according to the various ways that we've been learning in the last couple of dafim, if it's hot, then they're careful not to cut it with a fleshic knife. So do they need to do that? Is there a concern that there's still milk in there that is gonna chafe up the knife? Tosfos says that no, minag shel hevel hu. This is a useless minag, because he was saying that if the udder is below, then it's mutter even l'chatchila, and even if it's above the other meat, it's also only l'chatchila, so therefore there's no problem cutting the udder with a fleshic knife afterwards. Whatever milk is left in there is not going to create any problem. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Rav Ashi itla lebei Rami bar Chamua, lebei Rami bar Abba Chamua. Rav Ashi one time visited the household of Rami bar Abba, who was his father-in-law. Kazir the braid to Rami bar Abba, and he saw Rami bar Abba's son, which is to say his brother-in-law. So Rav Ashi noticed him to kashofit kavde ilove bistra. He was doing what we just said. You shouldn't do the hatchila. He was putting liver on a spit above other meats. Again, as Rashi describes, you have the kind of the arrangements of spits and the arrangement of the oven that they had in those days, where you would have whatever you put on the spit first, closest to the handle, would end up on top. So he had done that. He had put a piece of liver, and then below it, he put other pieces of meat. Omar, said Rashi, says, Kama Yohir Hayman Abanon. How, what about Gaiva? This Talmud Chacham is referring to his brother in law. Emu Domin Abanon Diyevet. Sure, the Chacham said that Diyevet it'll be fine. Lachatchila mi Omar. When did the Chacham ever say you can do that Lachatchila? So in other words, he's telling them, don't do that in the future. You want to roast liver together with other meat, make sure it's further down below the other meat and not above it. Okay. Now the Gemara points out the iika beit dugi. What happens if underneath the spit you put a beit dugi? A beit dugi is a pan to catch the drippings. Rashi describes, for example, in his times when people would roast geese, then they would do that. They'd put a pan under there to catch the drippings. You actually have what used to be a popular Jewish dish called dribbiness, which is basically they would take that, exactly that, the fat for the goose fat or whatever, the drippings of the goose fat, and let them dry, and they would become like a crunchy, crackly kind of snack. How healthy it is, I don't know, considering it's pure fat, but whatever, anyway. So if you have a bait doobie over there, if you have a pan over there to catch the drippings, so then, and now again, what if you're roasting liver and other meat? Bisri, lovik kavra, nami osir. Well then, even if you have the meat above and the liver below, then you're also, it's going to be osir to eat what's in the drippings over there, because together with the drippings, there's also going to be blood from the liver, and that's going to be a problem. So we want to ask them, my shnami yomid abistra. Fine, but how is it any different than the blood from the rest of the meat? When you regularly put a bay dugi below roasting meat, like Rashi says, below a goose, what's going to collect in the pan is going to be a mixture of blood and fat, and you don't have a problem because you skim off the fat. So what's the problem with the? So what's the problem when you have liver involved over here? And the answer is yomid abistra shochan, because the difference is the two types of blood behave differently. The one from regular meat goes down and sinks to the bottom. So therefore, then the fat floats on top, and therefore you can skim off the fat, and you can get it, and you can get it pure without the blood. Dumb and decab to coffee, but the blood of the liver tends to float, and therefore it stays mixed together with the, fat, and therefore you're going to have a problem. Which actually then the poskim point out that in that case, then the issur wouldn't only be if you're roasting liver together with other meat. The issur would be if you're roasting liver by itself as well. You'd have exactly the same problem because same thing, the blood and the fat, you're trying to get the fat from the liver that's dripping, but meanwhile there's also coming the blood with it, and the blood also floats, and then you have a problem. When the Rambam brings these halachas, actually he brings an interesting point that what you do is you put some salt into the pan, and that tends to attract the blood to it more. So again, that wouldn't work with liver, but it helps with other meat, that this way the blood will sink to the bottom, and therefore it won't be mixed with the fat. Okay. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Sakin Sheshochatba, if you shechted with a knife, also lachtich boris seach. So now afterwards, you're not allowed to use that same knife to cut hot food with, because it's called Besa Shchita Reseachu. The place of the shchita is hot. You think about it, when you shech the animal, it has its normal body temperature, and that's hot enough now that now some blood from the animal will have gotten absorbed into the knife. And now afterwards, if you cut hot food with it, then that blood is going to exude out into that hot food. An interesting point in that regard, by the way, is when we talk about the concept of reseach, you know, in the Gemara, we have reseach, we have the concept called Yad Seledesboy, which we talked about a few days ago in the Gemara, where something that's hot enough that your hand would naturally recoil away from it. You know, of course, the Gemara never deals with it in terms of temperatures, but the temperature scales didn't exist in those days. The poskim closer to our times had to translate them into temperature scales, and the problem is, how exactly do you figure that out? Our Gemara over here is one of the sources for that, because we see, therefore, that the temperature of the Beis HaShechita can be considered reseach, can be considered hot. Now, with an animal has approximately the same body temperature as a person, but on the other hand, birds have higher body temperatures, and their body temperatures often are somewhere in the area of like 105 to 108 degrees, give or take, and therefore the post can point out that's an important source for knowing what is considered reseach in Gemara terminology, that apparently such a temperature is considered hot enough for that purpose. Okay, what about, the Gemara says, soinen, what about if you cook... What about if you use the knife to cut cold food? Amrila boya hadocha. Some say that the food afterwards will at least have to be rinsed off, because even if you cleaned off the blood from the, even if you cleaned off the knife from the blood that was on the surface, nevertheless it's still absorbed. It's not going to exude very much into cold food because it's only cold, but nevertheless enough that you're going to at least have to wash off the cold food before you eat it. Amrila boya hadocha. Others say that it does not even need to be rinsed, because nothing of it will get onto cold food. You wipe the knife, so therefore that's good enough, and none of it is gonna get onto the food. Then there are a number of Rishonim who learn that the question in the Gemara is not so much whether the food would need to be washed, but do you need to wash the knife before you use it to cut other food? Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, another din, Ka'ara Shemolach Babasar, a plate or a dish that you salted meat in it to remove the blood, also Lechol Boreseach. For the same reason, you're not allowed to eat hot food in that plate afterwards, because it will have absorbed the blood. Because what happens is, if you learned before, Moliach Boreseach, when you have something heavily salted, then it has the din like it's boiling. So therefore, so the same way as boiling something in that plate will cause it to absorb, the same way now the salt will cause the blood to be absorbed, and now if we eat hot food in it afterwards, then it's going to exude into the food. Rashi points further down on the Amud, we're going to talk about the case called Dogim Sha'olu Baka'ara, which is when you have fish or other power food served hot in a fleshic plate. Now, there we say you have dinim about being allowed to eat it with milchiks, as we're going to talk about at the bottom of the Amud. Rashi points out the difference is that the difference is that here we're talking about directly noisin tam rishon. You're talking about that you have a direct transfer of flavor from the blood to the plate and then right there into the food, as opposed to the dog and sha'ol bakara. You only have, it's going to be what we're going to call later on, not by not. Nosin tam, the fish is going to absorb a certain amount of taste from the fleshic plate, and then you're concerned it's going to transfer it to the milchik that you're going to eat it with later, and that's much less of an issue. Not by not is much less of an issue, but here you have only one nosin tam, and therefore that's enough to make it also. So now there is a big machlokas we've shown him about the case over here. We're going to learn later on a couple of daf in Bez Hashem that in fact the container, whatever you're going to salt meat in, has to have holes, or it has to be on an incline. It has to be on an incline or something, because you don't want blood to collect in any one place and then it's going to get absorbed into the meat. So now, are we talking about over here this plate had holes in it or not? The Rishonim argue whether we're talking about you were supposed to use a plate with holes, but you didn't, and now therefore the plate becomes ulcer, and now you can't use it for hot food, or a number of other Rishonim say that we're talking about even where it does have holes, but nevertheless, fine, the blood does flow out, but some of it does get absorbed into the keli. You can say the meat itself won't become ulcer, because again, I just heard of the miflat, like bala, while it's exuding, it's not going to absorb, but you can't say that the plate itself won't have absorbed enough blood to become ulcer, and therefore that you can't use it for hot food anymore. So in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions. If you salted meat in a keli that doesn't have holes, then you're not allowed to use it for hot food, and yes, showing him that you wouldn't even be able to use it for cold food without rinsing it, And then you have the dinim about if you use a container with holes like you're supposed to. Okay, so the Gemara points out, so on the other hand, so you're not allowed to use that plate afterwards for hot food unless you capture it. In which case, Shmuel is going according to his shita. Because Shmuel holds that when something is heavily salted, then it's considered like boiling, and therefore now it can exude or absorb taste, as the case may be. And something that's soaked or pickled is considered like it's cooked, and also there can be transfer of taste. Rashi over here, and consistently in other places, talks about kobush, meaning specifically where it was pickled in some kind of sharp liquid, for example, vinegar or something. On the other hand, not over here actually, but in other places, Rashi understands that it means in that. The Rishonim explained, the Rosh explains that it can even be in water. The difference is in the amount of time. If it's in a sharp liquid like vinegar, then 18 minutes is enough for it to be considered kimabushal with all the implications and halacha that that has, whereas if it's water, then it's going to take 24 hours. You have a similar thing, by the way, not just as far as the halachas of kashrus. Yeah, it comes up, for example, also in other areas of halacha as well, where there are certain cases where you can't use something cooked. One example is, for example, you can't use a cooked estrog, or you can't use a cooked or pickled estrog for the mitzvah of dalad minim on sukkahs. So again, then you have, if the estrog was soaked in vinegar for 18 minutes, or if it was soaked in water for 24 hours, then it's going to be a problem, and you can't use it for that. Okay, so that's one opinion. On the other hand, the Gemara continues. He also Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that Rabbi Yechanan said, no, maliach ene kereseach, v'kobosh ene kimibosho. Salted food is not considered like it's boiling, and pickled food or soaked food is not considered like it was cooked. Tosfos points out, we're going to learn later on, we're going to have a din involving fish, but fish, fine, those are soft and those absorb easily. But here we're talking as far as meat. So Robin says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that it's not going to be such a problem. Omer Abaya, Hoda Robin Lessa. On the other hand, Abaya says, this statement of Robin's is not so, it can't be correct. And I'll prove to you, Dahi Pincha, to have a beir of Ami, there was a plate, an earthenware plate, in Rab Ami's household, the Moloch Be'bisra, where they salted meat in it to kasher it, the Tavre, and afterwards Rab Ami broke it because it absorbed blood, and because it's earthenware, you can't kasher it. Now, why did he break it? So the Ram gives an answer. That because it's earthenware, you can't really make holes in it. You can't really make holes in an earthenware cavity without breaking it. So therefore, so you couldn't, as a practical matter, he couldn't make holes in it, and therefore he broke it. Because again, since it didn't have holes, then you're not allowed to use it in the future for kashering. So a number of Rishonim point out also, now the question is, okay, but we said before that you can't use it for hot food, but implying that you could use it for cold food, so why didn't he keep it around so you could use it in the future for cold food? And the Rishonim explain, and this is brought la halacha, that it goes to show that when you have something that's also like that, that you can't keep it around even to use with cold food because you may forget and use it for hot food. And for the same reason also, you can't just say leave it for 24 hours and then it'll be no some time to scam. Now the taste that it absorbs will be considered deteriorated and it doesn't ask for things. And in many cases, nevertheless, that's only b'dieved. But l'chatchila, you're not allowed to. And therefore, Rav Ami did not want to rely on that. And therefore he broke the plate. So you see, now says Abaya, Mechti Rav Ami Talmud Rav Yechanan Hava. Now consider, Rav Ami was a Talmud of Rav Yechanan. And at my time at Tavre, why would he have had to break the plate? Must be because he heard from his Rebbe Rav Yechanan that something salted is considered like something boiling, and therefore it did in fact absorb blood enough that now you can't use it with hot food, and again, even to use it with cold food would l'chatchila be osur, and he doesn't want to rely on that, and therefore there was no choice but to break it. So you see, therefore, Rabbi Yochanan clearly, therefore, we can clearly see, evidently, that Rabbi Yochanan does hold that when something is salted, like here, where you salt meat and it's a kasheret, that it is, in fact, going to absorb enough blood to become ulcer, and therefore it can't be that what Robin is saying is correct. Okay. More on this topic, the Gemara continues. Yosef Rav Kahana, Achur de Rabbi Yehuda, Kamed Rav Huna. Rav Acha, the brother Rav Kahana, the brother of Rabbi Yehuda, was sitting in front of Rav Huna. So a different girsa, not Achur de Rabbi Yehuda, but Achur de Rabbi Yehuda, that he was sitting behind Rabbi Yehuda, the way they used to do it in those days. The senior Talmidim would sit in front and directly in front of the Rebbe, and then the junior Talmidim would sit further back. So according to that girsa, that means Rabbi Yehuda is one of the senior Talmidim sitting in front of Rav Huna, and Rav Kahana is one of the junior Talmidim, and he's sitting further back. The Yosef Akama, Rabbi Yehuda, was sitting and saying, it's interesting if it is that way, that Rabbi Yehuda is actually a chaver of Rav Huna. They were both Talmidim of Rav and Shmuel, so it's a little odd then maybe that Rabbi Yehuda would be sitting as a Talmid in front of Rav Huna. Unless maybe he was just visiting Rav Huna's yeshiva, and then he's not standing on ceremony and sits in front of him as a Talmud. Maybe therefore the girsa, the Kahana Achua, the Rabbi Yehuda is better, because then in Munin, fine, Rav Kahana can well be a Talmud of Rav Huna, and he's sitting in front of him. In any case, so the Yosef Akama, he was sitting and saying, Ka'ara Shemolach Babasar, a plate or a dish in which you salted meat to kasher it, also lechel baritzeach, then you're not allowed to eat hot food in it. On the other hand, he continued, if you cut a radish with a fleshic knife, then you would be allowed to eat it with kutach, which is a dip a very common dip that they used to use in those times. We're going to have several mentions of it over the next little bit, the end, more of the staff in the next one. It was a dip that they had in those times. Its main ingredient was milk. It was something like kind of the equivalent of sour cream or maybe cottage cheese or something like that. The point is, even though you cut the radish with a fleshic knife, and you often have, there's going to be some fattiness left on the knife, which the radish is going to absorb, and the radish, being that it's a sharp vegetable, nevertheless, so then it's going to make that even if it's 24 hours old, it's still going to be a problem. Nonetheless, Rav Kahana is saying you are allowed to eat it with milchix. My timer. Now, why is that? On the face of it, the same way as the plate absorbed blood, and therefore you can't eat it with hot food. On the face of it, the same way the radish absorbs fattiness from the knife, and again, because it's a sharp vegetable, a radish, therefore it causes that taste, even if it's deteriorated, becomes sharp and becomes pungent again, and therefore it should be also to eat it with milk. Why is it milter? Abaya says the difference is high a tater bala, high yisura bala. Because the difference is the radish, when it absorbed something that was mutter. A radish, you're perfectly allowed to eat a radish that absorbed fleshik, you're just not allowed to eat it with milchik. But fine, now that when it first absorbed fleshik, then we're not worried about afterwards you're going to eat it with milchik. As opposed to the plate, to begin with, absorbed itzer, because the blood to begin with was, the blood to begin with was also. Now, Tosfos points out further down on the Omud, Abaya himself is going to say that it's actually Osir, but right now he's not saying his own opinion. He's just explaining why Rav Kahana would say that it's Mutter. But Rava asks Abaya, what's the logic? He bola etera my hab. What's the difference if what it absorbed was heter to begin with? Soif, hayatera dosu bide isuru. The fact is it's the heter that comes to isur, the isura kaochel. Later on, when he eats this radish, which absorbed fleshit, and now he's going to eat it with milk, then you have actual bosa b'cholav. So who cares that to begin with it was mutter? Ella Omar Rava, so Rava says, no, there's a different reason to draw the distinction. Hay epshalom mitame, bahayla epshalom mitame. The difference is, with the radish, a git can taste it first. Taste it and see if it tastes of meat. If it doesn't taste of meat, doesn't to hate, eat it, and doesn't to hate, dip it into kotach and eat it. So when Rav Kahana says you're allowed to, meaning it was exactly that. You cut the radish with a fleshic knife. So afterwards, give it a taste. See if it tastes of meat. If not, then you'll know you can't eat it with kotach. And if not, then you could. As opposed to the plate that absorbed blood, and now you're concerned it's going to exude into the food afterwards. You can't taste it because a yid is not allowed to taste blood. But a papa asks Rava, what kind of a logic is that? Velika make filah al mas. I have a goyish chef taste it, as we learned in the previous perek. Me like Tanan, don't we learn in a Mishnah? On the side it says Tanya, didn't we learn in a Braisa? That if you cooked fleishik in a pot, you can't cook nilfik in it. The bishul be nois and tam. If you did cook the dievid, then you go according to nois and tam. Does the milk now taste of fleishiks? Similarly, bishul be truma, and similarly, if you cook truma in a pot, lo yivashul be chulin, then you shouldn't cook afterwards chulin in it, where a zora is going to eat it, because a zora is not allowed to eat truma. The bishul be nois and tam, and if he did, then again nois and tam, then check whether it gave it a flavor. Now, ve'amrinan, and we explained when we learned that braisa previously, when we learned it on Daf Tzadik Vav a couple of weeks back. So we said bishlema truma. When it comes to truma, it's easy enough to understand how we're going to taste. Toyin lakoyin, have a koyin taste it. See if he tastes any of the truma food that had previously been cooked in the pot. Assuming, of course, that's min b'shein and minoy. When it's min b'minoy, then you have all kinds of other issues, as we talked about there. Then you have the opinion of Rav Yehuda, that's not even going to be batal at all. But anyway, whatever. The point is, you were talking min b'shein and minoy. One time you cooked one type of food in the pot that was truma. Another time you cooked in the same pot different kind of food, which is chulin. Have a koyan taste the chulin and see if he tastes any of the truma in it. El abos b'cholot man toim lo, but we asked over there on Daf Tzadik Vav, what are you going to do as far as bos b'cholot? Who's supposed to taste it? How do you know if you can't give it to a yid to taste? But we were told, or Amrit Lon, it says on the side, it should be, and you told us, Litame Kfela, you have a goyish chef taste it, and he'll be able to tell. We talked about when we learned this, can we believe him just because he says so? What if he's misleading us? So we had one opinion that says that because he's Messiah Chavitrobai, it's allowed. He's not saying, we're not specifically asking him, tell us whether this tastes of Trefus or not. We just ask him, tell us what this tastes like. And he tells us Messiah Chavitrobai, he's just telling us without knowing that it has implications for Halacha. And that kind of thing we can generally believe the testimony of a Goy. Or the other possibility, we said, is because he's an expert. And Uman Le Mora Umanuse, an expert does not want to allow his expertise to be he's not going to want to put his reputation at stake. He has a reputation that he's known for being able to taste the flavors of things, and if he misleads us, then he knows people are going to stop trusting him. So those are two reasons why we can believe him. Anyway, So now Rapapa says to Rava, Hachanami, Litamekfela. So what do you mean over here that with the plate that meat was salted in, then you can't taste it and you can't know whether there was chafes in it? Litamekfela, the same thing. Let have a goyish chef taste the food that was in the plate afterwards, see if it has any taste of blood in it, and if yeah, you're not gonna know it's also, and if not, then it's mutter. So well, why is it any different? So why is it any different than the radish? And the answer is Hachanami. You're actually right. It could be that way. Kikamina, so Rava explains what I'm talking about that you can't, would be the luck of Kfela. If you don't have a Kfela, if you don't have a Goyish chef available, so then you can't use that method. And then we're saying the difference is, at least with a radish, you're always going to have an out because you can always have a yid taste it and just see whether he's going to be fleshed or not, as opposed to with the plate. If you don't have a Kfela, then you don't have that option. And in any case, as we learned on Daf Tzadik Vav Tzadik Zayin, nowadays that Amar writes, we don't trust the Kfela anyway, and we always go b'shishim. We always go. Do we have shishim or not? And therefore over here you're going to have the same consideration. Okay. Fine. Now let's continue talking about this matter of nois and tam, of one thing that gives a flavor to another, and now we're going to get into this matter of nach bar nach, where you have a double transfer from one thing to another, and then from the second thing to a third thing. So itmar, dogim sha'olu b'ka'ara, hot fish that came into a plate, namely, in other words, you cooked a roasted fish in the oven, and then you put it in a fleshed plate. Rav Amar also lo oichlan b'kotach. So now Rav says you're not allowed to eat that fish with. So now you're not allowed to eat that fish with kotach with that milchik dip. Shmuel Amar mutar lo oichlan b'kotach, whereas Shmuel says you are allowed to. Now the idea is basically like this: you put hot food into a cold fleshik plate. The question is basically. Which one is going to have effect on which? Is the So the Gemara discusses that point in Pesachim and discusses, you have a machlokas over there, Katar Gavar or Ilaw. We say that even if we say Tatar Gavar, the lower one is stronger. So that's, for example, you have a cold thing, and on top of it is a hot thing. It won't answer it completely, but you're still going to have, it's going to be also Kadei Klifa. You're going to have to still peel away a layer of it. So Tosfos discusses over here that it would mean that it wouldn't mean that you need Kadei Klifa. So therefore, that's why Rav is saying you can't eat it with Mofik, because now you have at least it absorbed meat to that extent, and now you're gonna have an Isur Basa B'Challah. Why Shmuel allows it, we're gonna explain as we go on. An interesting point in that regard is Rashi specifically mentions that the fish were roasted, because otherwise, if they were cooked, then they were only in Kli Sheni, and we learned before, Kli Sheni and Mevashel, a Kli Sheni is not necessarily going to cook them, and therefore you may not have an issue. So Rav Amar Osir, Rav says it's also to eat that fish with milchut, no sentamol, because the plate, which is flesh, it gave a flavor into the fish. Well, Shmuel on the mutter, where Shmuel is on the mutter, nois and tam, bound nois and tam. Because not a direct transfer of taste. It's not bound not. It's nois and tam, bound nois and tam. The plate gives a flavor into the fish, and now you're going to have a problem that the fish are going to have a flavor which is going to get mixed up of meat, which is going to get mixed with the milk. So that kind of thing wouldn't be a problem. If the fish had been directly cooked with meat, then for sure you can't eat them with flesh. And if you were to put milk into a hot milk into the fleshic plate, no question it would be ulcer. But over here, now it's going through a different thing. It's going through a power of thing. So this is as Rashi explains. It's going through a power of thing. So therefore, so Shmuel says that if it was fish that had been directly cooked with meat, or if it was milk directly into a fleshic plate, no question, Shmuel would agree that it's ulcer. Because that's nois and tam rishon, but here you have it's nois and tam, bound nois and tam. It's going through something else, going through the fish, which is par, and therefore Shmuel is going to allow it. So there's a concept that we have in halacha called nat bar nat. And there's different ways that we show him have of understanding what the logic behind it is. In particular, one big machloikas is, does this heter of not by not apply only in a case like this, a bus of a cholov, where, as we've learned a number of times in our perek, each one of them is mutter by itself, and it's only the combination that's also. So therefore, you have more reason to be maker when you have not by not, because to begin with, the taste of one that got into the other, the taste of the meat that got into the fish, is anyway a weakish taste, and therefore you can argue that it wouldn't cause a problem. What if instead the fish absorbed taste from something actually not kosher? Would we still say not by not over there? So then you have an issue, and then Rishonim discuss that, and most Rishonim say that in that case it would indeed be usur. So on the other hand, from Rashi earlier, it seems to imply that maybe he would hold that even when it was usur to begin with. Like for example, earlier we talked about a case where you salted meat in a plate with or without holes, as the case may be. Then we could say that maybe it applies according to that, and maybe it applies in that case also according to Rashi. In any case, you have Chatich and Nasa Tzavela, but in any case, you have other implications of it. This is all without even getting into the question of with meat and fish with milk that we talked about at the beginning of the parak. Fish with meat, the Gemara elsewhere says, is also because of sakana, because it's bad for your health. Fish with milk, the Beis Yosef talks about, is also, and the various Achroinim after him discuss the ins and outs of it. So you have this machloikas again of fish that was served in a hot fish, that roasted fish that was in a fleshic plate, whether now you're allowed to eat that fish with milchiks or not. So the Gemara says, V'hod Rav, lav v'feder she'itmar. Now this statement of Rav was not actually said explicitly, elami klola itmar. We rather deduce it from a story that happened with Rav. The Rav Ikol Beir of Shimi Bar Chiya Barbre. One time Rav visited the house of Shimi Bar Chiya, who was his grandson. Choshvenov and Rab had an eye ache or an eye infection or something. Ovdele Shaifa Betzah. So they made for him an ointment. They mixed together an ointment for him and prepared it on a plate. Basahochi Romile Bishulabagavah. And afterwards they used that same plate to serve Rab some food. They had washed it in between, but still toim like time into shayfa. He could still taste the taste of the ointment in there. Omar, so Rav says, Yoiv time a kula high. Look at that. It gives such a flavor. So it's obviously not just a weak flavor. We're obviously talking about it has a strong flavor. So therefore that shows, so evidently nat bar nat is actually, so nat bar nat evidently would be a problem. It's a weak taste, but it's still strong enough for him to detect. Or we say that, that it, at least it can't answer a third thing, that if it gives such a however, Gemara says, Elohi, that's not a valid inference. Shiny Hossam, the Nafesh Merodot Tfei. The difference is, in that case, with that ointment, it was extremely bitter, and therefore the taste was noticeable, even though the plate had been washed in between. But you can't say that that would apply to normal food. To say that the same din should apply, not necessarily would Rav hold that. Tosfos points out that, in fact, Rav does, in fact, hold of that shita. He does, in fact, hold not by not as usher, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. All it is we can't prove from this story involving the plate that had been used for the ointment that he actually holds that way, but the Gemara is going to point out soon something where we see that he clearly does hold that way. So the Gemara continues, Rabbi Lozer, have a coin, kamei de Mar Shmuel. Rabbi Lozer was one time standing in front of Mar Shmuel and serving him. They brought fish, roasted fish that had been put in a fleshic plate. And now Shmuel is eating that fish from the fleshic plate, and he's eating the fish together with kurtach, together with that milchik dip. Yoiv lay, so then Shmuel offered Rabbi Lozer some of this fish with the kurtach. And Rabbi Lozer didn't want to eat from it. Amalei, so Shmuel says, why not? L'rabach yehivilei, I previously gave to your Rebbe Rav. I gave him like that for ochel and yeh, but atloy achlus, and you're not eating from it. In other words, even though, fine, Rav hold not bar not is also, but evidently he must have changed his mind, because he, one time, I offered him the exact same thing, and he accepted it. So if you're learning from Rav, you, Rav Elozer, were Talmud by Rav, and you learned from him that you can't do that, well, why not? Rav himself seems to have changed his mind. Also, a kamei, to Rav. Well, Rabbi Elazar went to Rav, Omalei, and he asked him, is it true? Rebbe, did you change your mind? Omalei, so Rav says, no. Chasle lezara de Abba Ba'aba, chas v'sholem, the descendant of Abba Ba'aba, Abba Ba'aba was Shmuel's father's name, and so his Shmuel's father's name was Abba, and his father's name was also Abba, and he was known. We have all over Shas, Avor de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, is mentioned as a great tzaddik and Tamid Chacham. So chas v'sholem, says Rav, that a son of Abba Ba'aba, the great Tamid Chacham, delis b'lenidi v'loy svirali, or deloy svirali, that he should give me food, something that I don't hold, of. Something that I hold is also. In other words, Rashi says, like, it never happened. When you're telling me, Shmuel is saying that he once offered me such food, so it can't be. It's impossible because, in fact, I don't hold that way. Well, then how did Shmuel say such a thing? So there's a couple of explanations among Rishonim. The Ritva says that Shmuel didn't literally mean he had served it to Rav. He just says, like, Bederach Guzma. If I offered it to Rav, I'm sure that he would eat it because I would prove to him that not by not is mutter. So now he's saying to Rabbi Elazar, fine, I'm not going to go through that whole argument with you, but why wouldn't you eat it? And then there's another explanation, the Maharash Dam, a famous Uli Achron, who has a sefer of Shalos Atrovus that's very highly regarded. He explains that Shmuel did serve it to Rav, but Shmuel figured Rav knew that it had been already in a fleshic plate. So therefore, so he knows if Rav holds that not bar not is also, then he won't eat it. As it is, though, Rav didn't know that it was placed in a fleshic plate, and therefore he ate it. Now, the halacha is, in fact, like Shmuel, that you are allowed, because not bar not is mutter. So now, what happened was, in other words, the Maharshtam explains, there was a bit of a misunderstanding over here. Shmuel thought that Rav knew it had been in a fleshic plate, and if he still holds his shita, then he's not going to eat from it. Since he ate, then Shmuel figured that it means Rav changed his mind. On the other hand, Rav had not changed his mind, it was just that he actually didn't know that it was in a fleshic plate. Okay, so those are a couple of different ways of understanding what went on over here, how it is that Shmuel could say that he offered it to Rav and he ate it, when in fact Rav wouldn't hold like that. So there's other, There's other explanations. The Ritva brings another point that maybe when Shmuel says Rabcha, your Rebbe didn't eat. He doesn't mean Rav, he means somebody else. So Rabbi Elazar jumped to conclusions and thought that it meant Rav, and he goes and asks Rav and says, no, it wasn't me. It must have been somebody else. A practical halacha that comes from that, by the way, is that when you have, if one person holds that something is usur and the other one holds it's mutter, then the one who holds it's mutter would be allowed to serve it to the other one as long as it's nicker, as long as it's noticeable. Because here, Shmuel thought that it was noticeable. He thought that Rav would be aware that it was an aflashic plate, and he offered it to him. So there is a practical halacha that comes from that Amar brings it in Shulchan Aruch. And related to that is also, if somebody holds that a certain thing is usur because he holds the din like that, or because of a chumrah, he's allowed to eat together with other people who hold that it's heter, because they're not going to eat him something, they're not going to feed him something which he himself holds that it's usur. So I guess a practical example of that might be, let's say, for example, we who hold a full of Yisrael, if we're going to sit and eat together with people who don't, and they're having full of Akvum, then where they hold of the Heter, of Reb Moshe, that you're allowed to, then fine, we don't have to avoid eating with them, because if given that it's also to us, then we can be sure they're not going to give it to us without checking with us first, whether that applies across the board, or whether maybe it only applies to Tamid HaChamim. I don't know, the Ramah doesn't mention that it should apply only to Tamid HaChamim. So in any case, the point is Rav did not change his mind. And the Gemara says further in this connection, Rav Huna v'Rav Chiya ba'Ashi Abu Yasri. One time Rav Huna and Rav Chiya ba'Ashi was sitting. Chad b'hai gisad the mabra of the surah. One of them was sitting on one side of the bridge of surah. V'chad b'hai gisad the mabra, and the other one was sitting on the other side of the bridge. So they're sitting across the river. They're sitting across the river from one another. One of them, somebody brought him fish that had been put in a fleshic plate, and he ate it together with kotach, with the milk dip. And Lamar, and the other one who was sitting on the other side of the river, the other one was in the middle of a soda. He had washed for bread, and they brought him figs and grapes, and he ate them without making a before bracha on them. So each one has what to criticize the other one. Mar omale l'chavra yasma. So one of them says to the other one, you yosem, like yasma literally means like orphan. Like, are you orphaned from Torah? Do you not know better? Ovid rabba chachi, would your rebbe do like that? Umar omale l'chavra yasma ovid rabba chachi. And the other one says to the other one, Yosem, would your Rebbe do like that? Both of them, Rav Huna and Rav Chiya ba'Ashi, are both Talmidim of Rav, and each one is saying that you don't understand why you're not following what our mutual Rebbe, Rav, did. So Rashi explains, Yasma means b'loy das, like you're lacking das in that. Meaning, in other words, that the idea is this is that grapes and figs are things that are usually used, that are usually eaten for dessert. And it's called Dvorim Aboim La'achra Soda, things that are usually come after the meal. Shaloi Machmas Soda, they don't come as part of the meal, they're a separate thing. And even if you happen to eat them during the meal, you would in fact have to make a bracha on them. So therefore, so the one is criticizing the other, how could you eat those grapes and figs without a bracha? Meanwhile, the other one is criticizing, saying, Rav holds not bar naftas also, and you can't eat fleshiks you can't eat fish in a fleshik from a fleshik plate with milchik, so why are you doing that? Well, how does each one justify himself? Mar omale v'chavre. So one of them says to the other, the one who ate the fish with the kotach says, Anoki Shmuel thrilly. I don't hold like Rav in that regard, I hold like Shmuel. And in fact, Alocha is like Shmuel in that. Omar Omalei v'chavre, and the other one says to the other one, Anok Reb Chiya svirlei. I hold like Reb Chiya, the Tony Reb Chiya. Pas poteres, komin en Michael. When you make a bracha on bread, then it patters all the food that you eat throughout the Suda, even things that are not a regular part of the Suda, such as things that are considered dessert. So we'll patter the yayin poter komin en mashkin, and wine will patter all drinks that you drink during the meal, even if they're not something that are normally drunk as part of the meal. So the Chiya holds that way, and therefore it'll patter everything. So la halacha, we say that as far as wine, we say the halacha is sort of a hybrid. As far as wine, we do say that. You drink wine, you make a bracha on wine at the beginning of the meal, it patters all the drinks that you drink afterwards, whether they're a normal part of the meal or not, until benching. But when it comes to bread, we don't hold like him, and in fact, if you eat something that would normally be dessert, and you eat it in the middle of the meal, like the fruit over here, you would in fact have to make a bracha on it. As far as the nachbarnach, the halacha is like Shmuel, even though usually with matters of issur v'heter, usually the halacha is like Rav, but here the halacha is actually like Shmuel, that nachbarnach is mutter, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So we'll continue with that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll continue talking about the halacha of that, and we'll continue talking more about topics of milchiks and fleishiks and nachbarnach and all those kinds of things.